This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. Well, Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich has wrapped up his State of the State address and budget message. In the speech, he outlined a number of ambitious proposals and changes in tax policy. Two guests join us now to take a look at the budget and policy issues facing the state of Illinois. Both are affiliated with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. They are Peter Mulhall and Michael Cheney. Peter is director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs Center for Prevention, Research, and Development. Michael is professor of communications and associate professor of economics at the University of Illinois at Springfield. He's also a senior fellow at the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, where he directs the new Center for Technology and Public Policy. Created in 1947, the mission of the Institute is to help improve public policies and the performance of government. Both Michael Cheney and Peter Mulhall are contributors to the Illinois Report 2007. The report is the Institute's assessment of the state of our state. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Both our guests are raring to go, and they'd love to talk with you. They'd love to hear your questions and comments about the governor's proposals that he outlined this afternoon. Gentlemen, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in this afternoon. I think I would say that the heart of the governor's address today was what he calls his tax fairness plan. Want to start there? What are your thoughts? Let me back up here and say that the governor's budget plan represents a 9.5% increase over the current year. That's a big increase. And maybe I could ask here, you know, what he bills as his tax fairness plan cover most or all of the increase?
Let's start with what the Illinois report tried to establish, and then we can go, I think,
okay,
forward. Because when we put this report together and we started about 6 months ago, we wanted to really identify those sort of key policy areas that are going to be of importance to the state as we move through 2007 and into 2008. And we wanted to really take a nonpartisan assessment of where things are, use facts, a lot of evidence-based information. We do not really, in our report, take a position on a particular matter other than things that are quite obvious. We should have a balanced budget. These are issues that need to be addressed. But we really don't have specific policy recommendations for what we would say to do or not do. And so the governor's policy recommendations, if you will, today are ones that I think need to be put into the context of what we set out to study. And in our report, we really identified a number of the same key areas the governor identified as being of importance. If our report actually covers 8 different areas. Looking initially at the state budget in there, we come out very strongly saying the pension is one of the biggest issues for our budget, for the long-term health of the state. We need to find ways to get the pension under control, and you heard the governor today offer up a proposal. It's a way to do that. We also looked at the energy and environment, and while people in the House had these nice red stop signs for the stop the rate hike proposal, the governor made very little comment about energy. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of our report, we'd say that's an area that probably needs additional discussion because there are a lot of issues we can get into shortly. We also had a bit of a discussion about the overall economy. Despite what the governor said, the economy is not rebounding as fast or as robustly as economies in the neighboring states. So if you're a Midwesterner and you're in Illinois looking at how your state is doing and you have friends in Iowa or in Indiana, you'll find that there's not quite as much of a success in that area. We looked at employment. We are not growing as quickly with employment as our surrounding states. K through 12 we can talk about shortly, but that's an area that I think dominated a lot of the governor's speech, especially the first half of it with his emphasis on schools. Higher education, not really mentioned in the governor's speech, but right, it is something that I think is important. We can get into some of the issues, but it has been, over the last 3 or 4 years, sort of a second-tier issue for a lot of policymakers in Springfield. Healthcare.
Big one.
Healthcare was the number two issue for the governor's speech. And then finally, we have a discussion about immigration, which is something that occupies national attention but really hasn't gotten a lot of local attention. So in terms of our report, we'd say the governor identified the right problems. The solutions, I think, are things that we're now going to watch over the next 6 months and see how
they
develop.
And we'll see how the legislature comes into the mix and special interest groups
as well.
Peter, you want to join in and follow up on what Michael Cheney said?
Yeah, I guess I would like to, you know, just talk about this. One of the goals, as Michael alluded to, is really trying to present information so that the legislatures and Illinois citizens can take a look at where we are and potentially where we want to go. And again, the political process in some way is what we heard about today. And you're going to be hearing a lot more about, you know, whether this is viable or not viable, or who does it hurt and who it doesn't hurt. And the part that I wrote about in this particular report was education and looking at education. And I was particularly interested in looking at, I kind of broke it into four dimensions, early childhood education, which was addressed today and continues to be a major part of the governor's commitment to early childhood. And in fact, when you compare it to other states, which we tried to do in this report, you see that Illinois is making tremendous progress in early childhood education by funding early childhood programs for third and 3 and 4 year olds. And so I think that's the second part that I was particularly interested in was academic excellence and where Illinois is academically. And I guess the best way that I characterize it is Illinois has some of the best schools in the world and really some of the worst schools in the world. And I think that's a tragedy in many ways, but it doesn't mean it has to be that way. And I think some of the ideas about funding are really critical. The governor also has sort of an education plan helping kids learn that he's outlined a few things that I think are very critical as well. The third element I looked at was finances, where we are financially and how it differentiates among different schools and districts, as well as school completion. The governor mentions, you know, our improving high school graduation rate, but the reality is that these are just averages, and like anything else, many times there's deep stories behind these averages. So even though on average we may be doing pretty well, when you go to certain communities or you look at subpopulations, it's a much different story. So from the perspective of the budget, I think that, you know, Illinois schools have received increases in budget over, you know, since his administration's been in place. That's right, K through 12. And so there has been some gains there, but I think there has to be some leadership there. And that's one of the areas that I'd like to see a lot more being done, both from the state level and from the local levels as well.
Okay, very good. Now, Michael Peter has given us an overview of the K through 12 situation. You want to hop in and just give us a quick overview of the higher education picture.
Higher education in Illinois has really been a balancing act trying to come up with the necessary revenues to fund higher education. And in the state of Illinois, we divide that into two parts. We have state appropriations and we have tuition. And since 2001, the allocations for higher education in the state of Illinois have decreased. We right now are 7th out of 8 in the Midwest in terms of support for higher education from state governments. In contrast, we are 2nd out of 8 in terms of tuition increases. And what has happened is over the past few years, as state appropriations have declined, and for the first 4 years, state appropriations to higher education actually decreased each year. Not stable, not increased, but decreased. And in response, the universities throughout the state rose tuition to try to create a balanced budget in their part. One of the things that complicates matters is that the state legislature required what's called a guaranteed tuition program, which meant that a student coming in the fall is told what their tuition will be, and that rate applies for the next 4 years. So if you can imagine a university trying to guesstimate what they should charge someone, knowing that the first 2 years they are probably overcharging, but the last 2 years they are undercharging, and trying to predict what direction the economy is going to go, what's going to happen with inflation, the cost of a number of different support entities, you run into some very serious challenges. And that has meant that we have had double-digit increases in tuition almost every year, largely as, you know, state universities try to balance out what to charge and what to get for state appropriation.
What do you think accounts for the lapse in if I could use that word, lapse in state appropriation for higher education?
I think the governor has to prioritize, and he has a tier of areas he's interested in focusing on, and I think Peter would agree K through 12 has really been the bulk of his attention. I think previous governors had a little bit more of an interest in higher education, but for various reasons, the governor, partly because of promises he made coming in, has focused most of his resources on K through 12. He has, in last year and now this year, proposed increasing state support for higher education, mm-hmm. but it's a matter of over a 5 or 6 year period. You can't catch up that quickly. And I think Peter would agree that that's one of the things that's happened also with K through 12. It decreased support, and now we're catching up, but whether it's going to be in the right areas with the right kind of effect remains to be seen.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't really think that I don't think it's possible to catch up. And post 9/11 had a devastating effect on this country, sort of backed up by the fact that we had these fairly large surpluses where there was lots of spending. And there's a balance now going on, you know, with respect to spending versus, you know, versus trying to raise revenues, et cetera, et cetera. And in the work that I've done, you know, both within state government particularly, you know, it's not a big fat gluttonous bureaucracy over there, quite frankly. It is tough and it is lean, and these people are struggling to get the job done. And I think it's to a point now where it's actually hurting the quality of the work that's going on with respect to state government. And, you know, there was a lot of brouhaha about state government, you know, mm-hmm. several years ago. But that's very different. And so I think it's easy to cast aspersions and criticisms, but it's really, I think, comes down to leadership, and that the whole state has been sort of lacked leadership and changing over leadership and interim directors and all these things, which has really been problematic for the state of Illinois.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Two guests are with us this afternoon here on the program. Peter Mulhall, speaking just now. He's director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs Center for Prevention, Research, and Development. Michael Chaney, also with us in the studio this afternoon, professor of communications and associate professor of economics at the U of I at Springfield, also a senior fellow at the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, where he directs the new Center for Technology and Public Policy. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455.
I'd like to give a short promotion. The report is available on our website that can be downloaded. It's a PDF file. It's about 7 megabytes, so it's a fairly fast download, even with dial-up. And that address is www.igpa.uillinois.edu. And when you go there, there is in the upper right-hand corner a quick link section, and right there you'll see the icon for the Illinois Report 2007. And you can not only read about what we've been talking about, but also get more information, more details to make you a better informed citizen.
Okay. Well, one of the things the Illinois Report 2007 covers is the state budget and the assessment of the state's strengths and weaknesses here in the budget points out that the state faces a couple of big budget problems. A structural budget imbalance and the state's pension problem.
Yes. The structural imbalance comes about because we are taking in far fewer revenues than we have outgoing expenditures. Even today in the Chicago Tribune, the projection right now for the governor's budget is a $49 billion revenue stream and a $49.06 billion expenditures, which is a $60 million deficit, which starts to add up. But adding to that very significantly, and in many ways probably the thing that would be the most important, and it is something the governor did highlight tonight or today, was the emphasis on the pension system. There is, as he pointed out, we had $37 billion pension deficit come last November, and now when he returns, it's $41 billion. And the question is, even if you put 20-some million dollars towards it, will you end up still not having enough money? And as it grows again, will we be looking at a similar kind of state of affairs in another year when he revisits us again?
Okay, well, we're going to continue to talk about that, but in the meantime, let's take a call. A listener is waiting to talk with us in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello. I wanted to ask the gentleman about the figures that the governor gave in support of his corporate tax. That is, he indicated that corporations, especially large corporations, pay little or no taxes currently. And he gave some very specific figures about that, and in fact that there was a decrease. I'd like to hear what you have to say about whether or not those are accurate observations, and just comment on in general. I'll get off the line to listen.
Okay.
Well, I can't speak to exactly where the governor got his figures, but I can tell you the corporate tax structure only taxes certain entities. And if in the state of Illinois you create a limited liability corporation, an LLC, and a lot of doctors run those kinds of operations, you are not taxed by the corporate tax structure. And so I think in many ways that's where the governor is getting most of the numbers that we wonder why these businesses aren't paying. But you also have to keep in mind, he mentioned that 75% of the businesses in the state of Illinois are small businesses, would be under the $1 million limit that he set as sort of his cutoff point for what should be taxed and what should not be taxed.
Yeah, the tax fairness plan that the governor has laid out today, that's his terminology, that includes the gross receipts tax, good for businesses, he suggests, or could it negatively affect the state's business climate?
He cited a series of figures that said it was good for business, and he pointed out what was happening in Washington, what was happening in Ohio. He didn't get into the Delaware situation, but all three of those entities have it. Whether or not it plays out in Illinois is another matter. We do not have the kind of robust economy that those other states might have. Ohio was, in fact, a little bit better off the rebound from 2001 than we were. And so it's a matter of, is this going to be something that will stimulate or will this be something that will dampen? And there I think it needs more analysis. This is a new proposal. Whether, in fact, it will actually get passed is another matter. There are a lot of folks who are saying it's dead on arrival and that people are going to be lobbied or pressured or just not going to support it. And so that's a matter that I think we'll have to watch play out.
Yeah, and I guess I was going to say, as like anything else, there's always, you know, two sides to it. And, you know, you've heard stories and talking about, you know, educational funding particularly. There's been, you know, talks about tax swap. There's been talking about local income taxes. There's a lot of thinking about how to do this. And, you know, it does cost some people, you know, additional funds to do this. And so, you know, Illinois hasn't been doing as well as, let's say, Indiana in some of the competitive markets for, you know, a Honda plan or Toyota plan, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, on the other hand, we do need to find a way to bring some balance both to the budget and to the services that are provided. Of course, the majority of these recommendations that the governor has brought forward are really in some ways the most expensive. When you talk about health care, when you talk about education, these are by far, and of course, the pension plans. These are huge, and this has been his pattern over the last few years to kind of increase those or leave those alone and cut around the edges. So the reality is that we are talking about a real, I think, head-on collision here with respect to the budget, with respect to the needs of the state that he's put forward.
Yeah, one of the things that the Illinois Report 2007 addresses is there's a chapter or a section on the Illinois economy. You want to give us an overview of where we are and what we're looking at near term?
Well, there are a couple areas that we looked at, one of which was the whole notion of employment, and Illinois ranks 46th in the percentage of job growth since 2001 out of 50 states, which is not a healthy sign. If you're looking to put businesses here, most people are going to wonder whether they should consider some other state. Manufacturing has been particularly hit hard. We are largely a service and travel state in terms of where most of our employment comes from. But more interesting, I think, for the individual is that the per capita income in the state of Illinois has gone from being one of the better ones in 1997, 1998, to we are now dropping out of the top 10 states in terms of per capita income. And that has implications as well for the tax base and where people are coming and what kinds of jobs are being filled.
So why the downturn?
I think it's a combination of 2001 actually hit the state hard, and the state has not found a way, as Peter mentioned, through to lead us back into a period of robust support. And what the drivers are for that, I don't think anyone really has a handle on it yet, but that's what, from the outside, you'd look in and say, we just have not found a way to turn this economy around in a more robust fashion.
What are people talking about in terms of possible drivers?
I think the corporate tax structure is one that people say, well, will I bring a business here or not? It's a question of, with the gross receipts tax, if you're thinking of relocating a business here, would you choose to come here? We have issues in Chicago with the high liability practice rates that people are looking at whether or not they should come here because the highest tax, or highest rather, damages are assessed in the Cook County area.
What are the estimates on how much revenue this change in tax policy would pull in?
The one that the governor proposed today is looking at somewhere in the neighborhood, I think, of around $1.5 billion for the first year, but then ratcheting up to $3 or $4 billion in subsequent years as he rolls it out.
Yeah. Now, critics of the plan say it will be passed down to consumers. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair criticism?
I would suspect so. If you're running a small company or business with over $1 million in receipts, however, and you have to pay an additional 2%, you're likely to simply pass that along to the people who come in to take care of your services.
So in some way, there's also shifting of these funds. So you know, if we're taxing things that weren't taxed before, or you're adding taxes, then things get shifted from one source to another. So and I guess this is where the whole thought of doing this tax swap for income tax and property tax relief, and there was really no discussion about that at all.
One of the things that we have to put this in context, when the governor ran the first time and the second time, he promised no new taxes. And so the first 4 years, he really did not do anything that could be identified as an increased tax. This is now a new tax, and he positioned it as a fairness tax, which is probably the way he politically will position himself, that this is not so much a new tax as a way to create a fairer tax system.
Mm-hmm. Right. And he said, I'm not raising income taxes. I'm not raising sales taxes. This is a tax fairness issue.
And you do hear a lot of talk about the fact that our economy has changed, and so they're really looking at new ways in which we live, and that needs to be, then taxes need to follow that in a sense. So, you know, changing from the income tax, for example, to some of the different services that are out there, and I think that's been an issue that people have really looked at hard, is which services are going to be the ones that are. That can be taxed or should be taxed, and he's used it under this rubric of fairness.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because as the economy shifts and we're more a service economy, then we're losing out in a sense on revenue, because those transactions haven't been previously taken advantage of in the revenue stream.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One of the issues that Peter mentioned, and I wonder if he'd elaborate, is this whole discussion of the switching out for income tax for property tax to support education, particularly K through 12.
Well, I'm not a school finance guy, so I can't really, you know, I don't have a lot of detail there. But, you know, one of the things about Illinois, which is interesting and sort of incorporated into this report, that, you know, one of the key indicators that's used to understand school funding is per pupil expenditure. Mm-hmm. And Illinois has a range from about $4,400 to $24,000 per pupil. That's the range across the state of Illinois, which I think it's about there's about a $19,000 difference between what some schools pay for one, you know, for their students. And I think, you know, that's startling, I think, to most of us to think in terms of what a difference. And accepting the fact that we are talking about, you know, very different parts of the state, costs for teachers, costs for buildings, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we do know that there is radical differences in this. And I think one of the things is that how do we – I mean, and the idea isn't taking money away from those other folks. People have moved to those communities. They own houses. But the idea is, how do we bring this bottom of the curve up a little bit? And then the second part of that is what do we do to try and, you know, that's going to really make a difference in terms of educational quality? As I said earlier, you know, Illinois has some great high schools and great kids, and Illinois exports lots of college students around the Midwest and the country. You may talk about that, Mike, a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that we have a lot of good students but again, is it the top half of the curve, if you want to use that sort of metaphorically speaking? But it's the bottom half that we're really worried about, the bottom half that we're losing. And education is really probably the only way to do it. You know, I mean, that's the only hope that we have. And it does take more to educate kids who live in poverty, kids who live in disadvantaged communities. And it's not all in the city of Chicago. You know, you can look across the state to the larger, what I call the more of the medium-sized cities, the Rockfords, the Peorias, the Decaturs, Champaign, you know, to some degree. And then there's some rural areas in the state that also have real challenges, from, you know, Cairo and a number of other places. So the idea is that now I have to say that not everybody has or agrees on what we need to do. But I think there are things that come from research that have begun to show that there are things we can do. It does take money, but it also takes sustained energy, effort, and leadership to get things
done. Back to leadership.
Exactly.
And sustained leadership. So we set an agenda, and then we stick with it.
That's right.
Go 1 year to the next. In terms of bringing per pupil spending up, making it a little bit more equitable, bringing up the bottom, how far could that go into improving our completion rate, seeing kids graduate from high school?
Well, again, you know, the majority, you know, the greatest challenge has to do with disadvantaged kids. And that's where although, you know, they're doing better. African-American kids are doing better. Latino kids are doing better. And so as a result of you know, efforts in those areas. I mean, there's been a large number of redesign models with schools, middle schools and junior high schools, and then high schools that have really made some progress. And so I think we know how to do this. I think it's just a matter of trying to organize it in a way and get the leadership. You know, quite frankly, when you look at our I mean, you know, in this in the report, we show a little bit of the comparison between Illinois and, you know, Wisconsin spends nearly $1,000 more per kid, you know, and Indiana spends, you know, just below us. So the idea is that when you start to look at these things, you realize that states in the Midwest that we often compete for, you know, both economically, for you know, new jobs and new businesses, they're able to think about redistributing some of this money better than Illinois has done.
Okay. Now, as I understand the governor's proposal today, he would like to see a 25% boost in funding for K through 12. Where would that get us?
I think for the most part, that is really designed to address the foundation level to increase the per pupil expenditure that comes from the state of Illinois. Okay. And then there has to be some additional and you know, and that's very helpful, you know, to these districts. I think the other thing is they need to think about what other types of initiatives and in some of his other reports of you know, reforming schools, he has talked about, you know, there's very little money for professional development out there right now. You know, schools are really scrappy. Most of us can't conceive of not, you know, attending conferences or getting training and things of that nature. But, you know, school education system doesn't have much funding to do those things. There's additional, you know, costs that are related to technology. And Illinois actually has a pretty good handle on technology right now. But it's still something that we need to continue to develop
okay.
ourselves.
Now back to the threats that we face in terms of the budget and doing what we want to do. We've got this pension problem. Talk with us, if you would, about the governor's proposal today for the GRT, the gross receipts tax, leasing the state lottery, and I think also borrowing some money to boost the funds going into the pension systems.
At least as I understand the governor's plan, he really is going to look at two parts to help reduce the pension deficit that we have. The first of which is leasing the lottery, and they've pegged that at $10 million. Whether or not that will be the right dollar figure, we'll have to find out when they go out to try to lease it. It has been an interesting experiment across the Midwest as people have gone, or states have taken what are otherwise or previously public entities, things that the states ran, such as the Indiana Tollway, and turned it over to private contractors. And what we find in a lot of those areas is they are able to do some things to help balance the costs of operating the service that don't require the kind of political capital that might be otherwise required. In the case of Indiana, they were able to raise the rates in the tollway without having to get the wrath of the citizens down and the legislators down in Indianapolis. So that's one issue to consider. And in leasing it, they'll probably then change some of the dynamics of how it's staffed, some of the payout rates. There are a number of different things they can work with. But it gets the state out of the business of running a lottery as well. And there are probably a number of companies that have better expertise at doing that than the state does, at least in terms of keeping up with what's happening nationally. The other way of reducing the pension deficit is actually fairly creative, and that is going out and getting lower interest bond rates and getting those and using those to then pay off what are right now higher interest mm-hmm. bonds for the deficit for the pension. And so in that way, I think the governor needs to be applauded. That is the kind of initiative that will help bring down the pension deficit and will help us not have the kind of tremendous interest payments going out in full years, further years.
I've got a listener who's waiting to talk with us, and I want to get to that caller in just a moment here, but another pension question here. As a matter of policy, should pensions be off limits for funding other state programs? Would it be possible to require that if in lean times the systems were underfunded, then when the economy improved, they would have to receive a boost in deposits?
I think for a smart person sitting down thinking about it, that would probably be a nice way to do it. But if you look at what we're doing nationally with Social Security, we are doing the same matter. receipts that come in for pensions, receipts that come in for Social Security are put into the general fund and used to spend it in different ways. In the state of Illinois, there's a little bit more of a compartmentalization, but it still has been used to underfund in order to do some other initiatives.
Okay, let's talk with this listener now. A listener in Charleston on line four. Hi.
I have a question on the school consolidation. Don't they need to revise the whole way that's done rather than moving whole districts? And don't they need to be able to split up like Oakland, part of them go to Charleston, part to Arcola? The whole I-1 corridor is in trouble. Clark County, if they combine those three schools into one high school, they'd have a decent-sized high school. Doesn't the whole consolidation issue need to be tackled?
Well, I think the school consolidation issue is a good one because we do know that there are economies of scale that can be improved. On the other hand, schools are such powerful identities for communities, and the strength of that is very, very difficult to get people to think about that. It happens, and it's the consolidation process has slowed down. There's been fewer schools, but I think in some ways this proposal is to try to find a way to sort of renew that process and look at that and look at the costs are. But it's a difficult topic for communities to give up that identity. I think it does take, certain kinds of leadership and community involvement in order to make that changes. So the other part of that is each community, it's a different task. It's a different chore to consolidate because, like you said, that maybe, these three communities that naturally go together right now, one is in a different setting and it really would fit better over in a consolidated district. So it's complicated, it's difficult, and it's highly, politically charged as well. So
one other question.
Yeah.
Why is the driver's license sacred? I mean, where else can you drive for $2.50 a year for a year's worth of service? I mean, it's $10 for 4 years. Why don't they, raise it to $25 and go to a five-year license, relieve some pressure from the driver's station, and bring in the extra revenue and raise it a little bit? Why is the driver's license sacred?
That's a great question. Not really certain. I do all my work my registration stuff online, so I can avoid going to the motor vehicle department all the time. So I guess the reason that it's as inexpensive as it is they haven't found out yet. But I assure you that if they see it as a source of revenue, they might pursue that.
Well, this voter perhaps would be willing to go along with that. Other voters might say, heck no. Let's take another call. A listener on campus, line one. Hi.
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 I wasn't able to hear all the governor's address, and I'm curious, being on campus, what might be done about renovation to buildings, Lincoln Hall, or anything else on campus?
Thank you. That's a good question, and I think it's one that we have not had any capital expenditures in higher education for a number of years. The governor did not really speak to it directly, but if you read some of the articles, there was an article, in fact, in today's Chicago Tribune. They note there will be somewhere in the neighborhood of $600 million for higher education capital projects. How that gets allocated gets into a whole different set of politics. But the Lincoln Hall project has always been at the top of the list for the University of Illinois for a number of years. But the most we've been able to do would be to get some funds to look at how to go about renovating it, but not to actually start the renovation. But I think for people from the president on down, that is the highest priority capital project for the University of Illinois. And as this money is available, the president will be out there strongly lobbying that this is part of where the money needs to go.
So it might be in the budget next year or it might not?
First of all, it depends whether or not the House approves the budget, the legislature approves and sends to the governor a budget that includes the $600 million capital project. If it is included, then it gets into the politics of the higher education community and to what extent the University of Illinois can claim the percentage they need in order to fund the Lincoln Hall renovation project. I am sure right now there are folks over in Henry Administration Building trying to figure out how much money they need and how they might go about lobbying to start that process, because I think anyone who's been in the building the past few years realizes that it's probably the place on campus where we need to spend our money for capital improvements.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And I was going to say, Michael, I've heard a lot of talk about this capital development funding and stuff. I think this time is ready for this to happen. So I'm very confident that this funding will pass through the legislature and be out there. Whether or not to allocate it to this campus, I can't guarantee that. But I was in Springfield last couple of weeks, and I've heard a lot of discussion about the capital development funds.
Some of it would go actually to K through 12, about $1.5 billion for new schools and renovations, and then about another $400 million for public transportation projects. So I think – and that, as we know, capital projects then help the employment picture because it increases the number of jobs and will probably result in some job growth.
Okay, very good. This is The Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our guests this afternoon, Michael Chaney and Peter Mulhall, both with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, both contributors to the Illinois Report. Let me make sure I've got it. Yes, the Illinois Report 2007. I've got a number of pieces of paper in front of me this afternoon, so things are a little confused. Healthcare is one of the topics that you cover in the report. Why don't we get an overview of where we are and the challenges that Illinois covered could help us meet or could present?
Well, as we compare ourselves to other Midwest states, the percentage of people who are covered in Illinois by health care are similar to those across the Midwest, also across the nation. So in that sense, we're pretty much at the norm. Among Midwest states, however, we have the highest percentage of uninsured residents. So when you heard the governor today talking about trying to get another million people covered, he is speaking to that issue. We also have the lowest percentage of residents enrolled in Medicaid. And given the demographics, that may not necessarily be an accurate reflection of the number of people who might be enrolled. And Medicaid has been an ongoing source of contention within the state. The governor's budget proposal actually would propose seeing an increase of about $90 million in the upcoming fiscal year to help with reimbursement rates provided to providers. And as we know, healthcare costs continue to go up. And there are, as you've heard stories, providers who refuse to deal with Medicaid patients just because the return is not there to make it worth their while. So for some Medicaid patients, they're oftentimes trying to shop to find a doctor who will take them.
Now, with the kids program, that's been it's relatively new, all kids, but there have been some problems there. Could we see those problems transferred to Illinois covered?
That's a question I think we have to see the details. And this is one of the issues when you hear, and it's much like with the other issues we've discussed, when the governor says he's going to put $3 billion
it's
more
huge.
In this area or that area, what are we going to get for it? How is it going to be implemented? What is it going to be the makeup of where the dollars go? That's still in the details, and I think that's where, as it unfolds in the next couple of weeks, those who watch and pay attention, this is something to really track.
Yeah. Would this require setting up a new department, a new bureaucracy?
I do not believe so. I think they just have we actually have the Health Care Justice Act that we passed in 2004, which puts the framework in place for a lot of this. This is simply a matter of adding additional dollars and expanding the coverage to new constituencies. Mm.
This lack, where we have the lapses in health care in the state of Illinois, does it spill over into important areas like the overall economy?
Let me take a shot at that. I mean, I guess, you know, one group would argue that it helps the economy enormously because you're taking some of the burden off both the employers, okay, when we think about the folks who are not employed. And I think the largest group of the uninsured is sort of the 18 to the 24-year-olds, which are mostly young kids who are going into different kinds of new jobs or marginal jobs or people who work in fairly the service economies who don't have those. So there is an enormous burden there both for the individuals and their families as well as the employer. So one of the ideas of something like this, it could have tremendous impact on certainly taking care of potentially the family, but also taking some pressure off the businesses. And there's a lot of discussion if you look at the Massachusetts model, for example, where they're trying to get 100% universal coverage, et cetera, et cetera. So I think overall that most people would think that it's a good thing. There are always costs associated with it, and I think that's the question now: is can the state afford it? And that's really what it boils down to.
And Peter mentioned the Massachusetts plan. That's an interesting plan because if I'm a small business owner and I have people who are working for me that I don't provide health insurance for, I only have to pay $249 per person to have that person covered by the Massachusetts plan. And so if you're a small business operator, you think about what would you do if you had the chance? for $250 to provide health care for a year to one of my employees. That would be my choice as opposed to providing it on my own. And to what extent will people scale that and say, here's where it needs to be? And can then the state afford to make up the difference on all those health care people?
Is the service economy in the state of Illinois mostly small business?
75% of the we heard today, and that's a fairly consistent figure. And as you look at where that would be, most of those are going to be your small operators, your insurance agents, your health, your travel care people.
So we could see a strengthening, perhaps, of the service economy? That might be a way to boost the overall economy?
I think it's a matter of does the gross receipts tax go through? And that's what's going to be used to fund a lot of this. And if that doesn't go through, we're going to be looking at still no real significant revenue increases to fund some of these initiatives.
Okay. Well, before we wrap up, probably we should talk about something that's on the minds of a lot of folks, and that's energy. Michael, you want to give us the overview of the Illinois report on energy and the environment?
Illinois is uniquely situated because it is really at the crossroads of oil, natural gas, and electrical transmission in the Midwest, and it makes us a prime target to consider a number of different initiatives. Obviously, the recent increase in electric rates has most people's attention, but we also have things like FutureGen, looking at two sites in Illinois, which suggests we are a viable place to be a hub for energy production in the near future. As it is the case with a couple of these other areas we look at, it's really a balancing act. To what extent do you want to encourage additional energy production, and how do you then balance that with the environmental concerns and the mercury that gets released and some of the other matters? One of the things that most people don't realize is that Illinois has more nuclear power plants than any other state in the country. And that's another source of energy that sort of comes and goes with people paying attention to it, worrying about it, or approving of it. But Illinois is really in a nice position in terms of what it wants to do with energy. I just think we need to look at how we dictate things. And I think the recent release of the cap on electric rates shows that having the legislator get involved in this and make the policy was probably not the best way. And to return to something that we used to have earlier with the Illinois Energy Commerce Commission, looking at utility rates and setting those on a regular basis was a way for a more managed, if you will, energy cost.
Why did the importance or the significance of the Illinois Commerce Commission fall off?
Because the legislature 10 years ago
said,
we will freeze rates. We're going to take over it, and what we're going to do is, in essence, freeze rates. And then they didn't pay attention to it for 10 years. And then it expires, and suddenly they go back. There are also some questions, and you can look at some of the editorials that have been written recently about sort of the whole mechanics of how we deregulated energy in this state. And the fact that certain producers had to sell it at a market rate even though they could produce it for less, and they could only sell so much to consumers and businesses. And so there were some interesting differences where there was a lot of cost added that may not have been if they had constructed differently or had somebody looking at it in a more managed way.
Okay.
But the typical legislator is not one who tracks this issue closely, other than now suddenly hearing from constituents that I have a 200-300% increase in my utility bill for the month of June or January or February.
Yeah. One last issue, and we'll have to give it a short shrift, I'm afraid, and that's immigration. And I think, you know, as we've talked now, I can see its importance in terms of the overall economy, in terms of how we deal with health care, in terms of education. Thoughts on immigration, and maybe you want to tell us why this was an important enough topic to put in the Illinois Report 2007.
I think if you look at the various media reports on immigration issues, there is a certain disconnect between the immigrant or the immigrant population we have in Illinois and what most people perceive. We rank fifth in the number of foreign-born residents in our state amongst all the 50 states. And interestingly, if you compare native-born people who are born in the United States versus immigrants, they're both likely to be college graduates, and actually immigrants will earn a little bit more than residential-born. So this is not the normal view most people have of who our immigrants are who are coming. Yes, there are still people who take on the service jobs and the jobs other folks do not, but that is something that we're not as prone to have in some other areas. Interestingly, 62% of all immigrants are married, and only about 37% of native-born residents are married. So it's a little bit more of a stable family environment. The Pew Foundation did a survey trying to get at some of the public opinion about it. And it's an interesting issue because as you hear politics in Washington go on, they seem to make it a binary issue of either this or that. But about 70% of the people in the United States support public school access for children of illegal immigrants. They felt there's a need to put them into the K-12 system, move them through. They thought there was a need for some kind of national employment database and driver's license examination. And interestingly, of all the places, residents of Chicago were more tolerant of immigrants on the average than the national population. So Illinois seems to be a welcoming, inclusive community. There are still some who think they ought to be sent home. Over 53% of the folks nationwide think people, immigrants, ought to be sent home. But about half of those still support some kind of temporary worker program. So we sort of have this mixed mind, and it's not quite as black and white as I think it gets presented in the media.
And I guess I just to follow that up, I'd say that there is a major, you know, it's a major issue with respect to education and healthcare and the services provided, because there are, you know, additional costs associated with it. You know, kids come into for bilingual programs, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that even though that there's fairly open, I think, you know, many folks, like you said, in Chicago are fairly open with immigrants, there are costs. And I think those are the ones that have to be dealt with on a day-to-day basis in our schools, in the communities. And that's a struggle for the families who are trying to get ahead, as well as the educational systems, the health and welfare systems that are trying to address these issues. So it's complicated. Illinois is one of the largest has one of the largest Latino populations in the United States now, and continues to grow as well as other foreign nationals. So it really contributes dramatically to this state and where it is and where it's going. So I think we need to continue to find ways to integrate them into the fabric of the state.
Peter Mulhall, Michael Cheney, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Both our guests this afternoon with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. The Illinois Report 2007, the publication of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. You can find it, you can download it on the web at www.igpa.uiillinois.edu.